On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking about encampments back at City Hall, the discussion of what to do with encampments in public parks. We'll dive into that one. And who are the all-time underrated Canadian musical acts? There are a bunch. We're going to have that discussion. And are there some that are overrated? Oh, yes, there are. We may even touch on that. Stick around.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Down at City Hall today, the city's General Issues Committee was again discussing and addressing the homeless encampment issue. You're probably, I assume, very familiar with this by now. It has been going on for a while. What do you do? What does the city do? What's the appropriate response for people who are living in tents in public property? And this is one of those issues that has really divided opinions. There are those who are on one side, those who are on the other. It is very heated. It is one of the real challenges that the city is facing right now. Well, today they voted to support enhanced enforcement, which will allow police and bylaw officers to remove tents from public parks within 72 hours. Again, this is going to be applauded by some. It's going to be ripped by others. We know that because every other decision on this topic has been that way. The counselor who's been, one of the counselors who's been at the forefront of this is Ward 2 counselor Jason Farr, who joins us now. Counselor, thanks for the time today.
No, thank you, Scott. And then the motion was at Planning Committee yesterday. Today's CIC mentioned housing quite a bit, but it'll be ratified next Wednesday. It's it was a long one yesterday. It's a long one. I'm actually just stepping out of GIC today, so not hard to get the topics and the motions and the meetings confused for sure this week.
Well, how is the then, because this has got to go in front of City Council, full council for a vote, but how is the proposed new rule different from what has been in place?
Well, what has been or currently is until ratification, if it passes with all of council next Wednesday, was simply that we were the only city that sort of had an open-ended process of enforcement. Every other city, and that was the genesis of this. So I spent the last few months as the mover of the motion looking at other cities and what do they do with respect to this issue. All of them are within the time frame that I suggested in the motion. Nobody questioned that yesterday, none of the delegates, none of the staff, none of the other councillors. And so that's what I brought forward. I was just amending the current process so, you know, there would be some timelines consistent with all of our comparators.
I mean, the big question always is this going to solve the problem? Is this a solution?
In some ways, yes. In many ways, no, I will admit. I mean, it's a problem not just with this city, quite obviously. But when you check with the comparators and see what they're doing, and then you factor in what Justice Goodman said in the Superior Court when an injunction was sought on any kind of enforcement last fall in the 2021. You know, he said by prolonging this, you're actually putting a scenario in place for those who are in camp to entrench themselves. And so in that respect, I think you are solving the problem for some. The prevailing problem is an ongoing problem and one that's recognized across the country quite obviously. And the good thing is the higher levels of government, and particularly the federal government, have recognized it and are starting to at least attempt to fund accordingly, because we certainly can't do it with municipal dollars.
One of the huge issues with this, regardless of how you're going to go after this, if you're now speeding up the process or having a tighter time frame to get rid of people, is this not just asking for further confrontations? We've already seen confrontations. We've had charges brought and then dropped, but is this not going to just lead to more of those things?
I can't predict how often we're going to see confrontations, or even if we will continue to see confrontations. Certainly some in the community have suggested they will continue to defend vehemently in enforcement of encampments. But the reality is all this was taking a process that we're doing in Hamilton and turning it into the same process as everywhere else. And it, quite clearly, we can't be the only city. We had a houseless count, one of the points I made yesterday in committee. Recently, the summary of the housing count, and all of the cities are obligated to do this nationally every couple of years. 25% of the houseless community arrived in Hamilton in the last year. So we also had, and I mentioned this publicly last year and maybe even on your show, a staff sergeant who's been working outreach and working in the downtown community for 10 years had mentioned in a public meeting, in a BIA meeting, that the word is out, that the homeless folks were coming from other regions because the word was out that you could entrench yourself in Hamilton. You couldn't in their communities. And so there is a theory that I have that quite possibly of that 25% of some 540 that whole houseless folks that completed the survey said that they came here within the last year, very much came here for the reasons that they were able to, you know, entrench themselves in encampments in Hamilton where they couldn't do it in the communities that they were coming from. And that's just one.
So
aspect.
What happens?
There are
if,
many. It is quite intrinsic. It's quite detailed.
Well, and it is complicated. There's no question about
it
that.
Is,
what happens if? What happens if the people who are moved now, so the bylaw or police go in and try to remove them or ask them to leave, and if they don't leave, they can be removed. Are they not simply going to move to another park and settle there? Are you not essentially just creating a situation where we're just going to have to chase this forever? Because where else were they going to go?
Well, again, back to Justice Goodman's comments, and credit to our outside legal from Gowling's as well, our lawyer Burden. If you don't, we still do outreach, and so do many of the other communities I spoke to, Scott, that have a much more expedited process. So you still have options. So I would hope that folks would be encouraged to take those options, knowing that there's no option to continue to entrench yourself and stay for months at a time, which is what we've been seeing the last few years. So back to that comment by Justice Goodman, if you are the only community that allows a process to be played out of enforcement of encampments or camping in parks and public places to be sort of open-ended or to have that capacity to be open-ended, it doesn't happen in every case, then there is a likelihood, as the justice claimed in his decision, which was in favor of the city, that the bylaw was just and no injunction was granted, that you would stay entrenched, that you wouldn't take options because your preferred option was to sleep, in my opinion, in the most unsafe and inhumane way, sleeping rough outdoors.
This has certainly, and we only have a second here, this is, I don't know whether your plan at one time was to be the face of this or the guy at the front of this thing. Are you comfortable? Because this is one of those real hot button issues. Is this something that you're, that you feel good about being the face of the person regarding the encampment issue? Or do you say, I wish I was not the one who was the one doing this?
So I'm really glad you asked these kinds of questions, Scott. You're one of the only guys that does. You're really bringing the personality into it. And my answer is absolutely not. I had mentioned yesterday, among many things, I take zero comfort in this. And so do the many, many residents who call. When they call, oftentimes what I first hear from someone who's complaining about the impacts, and that's what this is about. We can't pretend there are no impacts, Scott. There's a long list of impacts, criminality, violence, public urination, defecation, explosions, 140-something fires. It goes on and on. So there are impacts, and that's what we're trying to address here, right? Trying to mitigate at the very least here. And all those residents that I speak to, or have those concerns, have compassion, want to know what we're doing. And I'm able to tell them that there is no community across Ontario and I think across Canada that does homelessness and housing better than Hamilton. That also was not argued yesterday. There was 45 delegates and no one said, no, this city does it better. This city does it better. We do it very, very well. Are we 100% successful? If we were, everybody would be housed. No community can make that claim. So no, absolutely. Am I confident though, Scott, that the direction and the approach I'm taking here is one that speaks to a large majority of the citizens, at least in Ward 2? I am confident. I have done enough work in a large amount of my time, especially in the last year, and even in the year prior, during this pandemic in general, I've devoted a lot of time, and so has council and city staff. I mean, we have added, many new staff. We have 7 outreach people. We have new bylaw officers. We even have a pitch tomorrow, Scott, you may be of interest to you, where we're asking for a whole new division of the city of Hamilton called the Encampment Division. So that gives you, we don't do that often, create new divisions for any one subject. But that gives you an idea of just how prevalent this issue is, how impactful this issue is, and how important it is. So I think that answers your question. I'm confident in what I'm hearing from the public. Am I comfortable? Absolutely not. I have zero comfortableness, let's say, as I move forward. But I'm a politician. I'm a local politician. I represent, a whole lot of people, about 40,000 here in Ward 2. And, you have to make a decision. You have to answer to the concerns and the complaints, and you have to govern accordingly.
Ward 2 Councillor Jason Farr, thank you for the time today.
Always appreciate it, Scott. Thank you for having me on your show.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
I was flipping around the channels the other night, and I was very fortunate because usually, and you've probably experienced this too, usually when you're flipping channels, you land on something well into the program. When you come upon something that you go, oh, that's really interesting, you're already half an hour and you go, oh man, I missed the begin, whatever. I was really lucky. I landed on it as the thing was starting, which probably helped the story here. And I thought, oh, I'm going to stick around and watch this for a few minutes. It was a documentary. I don't even know who made it, but it turned out to be very well done. It was a documentary about the Canadian band Triumph. It was called Rock and Roll Machine, and it was a documentary about the history of the band, basically. And, I mean, I know music by Triumph. I'm sure you know music by Triumph. We'll play some of it later on. Maybe Ben will take us out with some music from Triumph. You're familiar with it. You would know it. Anyway, growing up, and not even growing up, as a teenager and as they were in their glory days, they were fine. I always thought of them kind of as a pretty good but a pale imitation of Rush. Three guys, lots of volume, good on their instruments, but kind of always in the shadow of that other Canadian trio. I got to say, watching this documentary changed my mind more than a little bit. I'm watching this and I'm realizing the story behind it. And by the end of it, I was thinking, I have seriously underplayed, underestimated, underrated Triumph as a band. And it got me wondering about other underrated Canadian bands. Well, let me bring in Eric Alper. If there's a guy who can talk about this, not because he's underrated, far from it, but he is a guy who knows his music and knows his Canadian music, a music publicist, a music writer, a music expert. He joins me now. Eric, how are you doing today?
Good, good. Let's just say that in the good looking department, my mother would think I'm underrated.
Yeah, in that same department.
In the handsome, he's very underrated,
Yeah, and in the same department, I'm probably considering myself overrated. So it all balances out. It's all good.
So,
I did, and let me ask you, do you think that Triumph is underrated as a Canadian band?
Yeah, because you rarely hear them on the radio these days. And
exactly.
And that's no slight to the people that are programming it. It's always a big deal whenever I hear Tom Cochran and Red Rider or Triumph or Honeymoon Suite on U.S. radio stations, because I kind of like to think, well, let's just step outside of myself as a Canadian music fan. Like, do people in Niagara Falls realize that this band is Canada? Does somebody in Kansas know that this band came from St. Catharines or Niagara? And most often than not, it's just they kind of treat those bands like one-hit wonders. Like, so you end up with a group like Triumph, and if they were ever to appear in concert, or if you went through their greatest hits, you would just hear like a dozen or two rock solid classic songs. And they just disappeared as, quicker than most bands tapering off. Because all of a sudden, they're still having American Top 40 hits in the late 1980s. And then they released a couple of songs that might have done well here in Canada, thanks to Canadian content rules, but maybe didn't break in the U.S. And then that's it. And then they just split up and Rick Emmett went solo.
Another group that when you talk about that you go through their greatest hits, and we're not just talking about Triumph today. For people tuning in, this is not just a discussion about Triumph. We're jumping off with this one. When you go through the greatest hits, there was a commercial on TV a while back, because I think Foreigner was coming to the Niagara Casino or somewhere like that. And it was a guy, it was the lead singer of Foreigner on an elevator singing his greatest hits, like just with people.
Oh, yes, I remember.
And as he was going through this list, I got thinking to myself, I forgot how many hits Foreigner had. Now, they're not Canadian, but it was the same idea where you sort of, they're just sort of always there and you don't really think of their body of work. And then you kind of, when you're thinking about the great bands of their time, Foreigner never comes to mind for me, but probably it should be in there as well. There's a ton of them like that, that we just sort of, they're just there and we don't think of them much.
Yeah, and so much of it has to do with the way that you consume your entertainment. You know, when you asked me about this topic and I gave you a couple of artists, I realized that they were all from the 80s. Because that's how, when I was a teenager watching Much Music, artists like The Spoons and Grapes of Wrath and Platinum Blonde and Sloan were Men Without Hats, Blue Peter, Strange Advance. All those bands were having hit after hit after hit after hit. And for a time, you think that these are the most important bands in your life. And probably they are, because they're playing your cities. They're on your video screen. You hear them from your local radio station. And then within 3 years, they've all pretty much burnt out, except for artists like Sloan that are still around. But all those bands from the video era couldn't even make it really past 1991 once Nirvana and grunge music came along. But you rarely hear them with new music. You rarely see them touring except for the weekends or maybe at classic music festivals. And I think a large part of it has to do with, well, there might not be any space for them anymore, even if they put out the greatest album of their career. Who's going to play it? How are you going to hear it? So a lot of it has to do with these underratedness of, like, they're just not oversaturating the market, you know, like Journey is, or Boston is, or the Beatles are, where, yeah, they're, you know, you can go an hour without hearing any of those bands, but probably not that longer than the hour.
All right, so who I asked you earlier when I said to come on, and I just to give you a little bit of a heads up, because this is one of those ones, it's a tough one. People listening right now and we're saying, who would be your all-time underrated Canadian bands? For people listening, start thinking about it. It's a tough one, though, to come up with them off the top of your head, which is why I gave Eric a bit of a heads up on this one. But you mentioned a few of them. Give me a few that you would say, you know what, Canadian band, way underrated. Don't get near the due that they should for how good they were.
Oh, I think at the top of my, yeah, I think Strange Advance out of Vancouver was probably as close to Kraftwerk, electronica, keyboards, David Bowie style music in the beginning of the video era that I think should be getting way more recognition for bringing modern music to small towns and cities across Canada with songs like We Run and, She Controls Me and Love Games and Kiss in the Dark. They have a new album out now, and it made me go back into their greatest hits. And I swear to you, I could not get their songs out of my head for a solid week. And so I think that they are one of those bands that, you know, they never hit number one, but they certainly had a really good run that I think influenced a lot of bands that were watching Much Music in the 90s and 2000s.
I think you just said something too that probably is a good tell if a band has been underrated. And that is when you go back and you may not have even listened to them a lot. I've done this with a few bands lately. I didn't listen to, you know, band X or band Y a ton, and you hear a song and you go, okay, I'll go check it out. And all of a sudden you realize I really, really like these guys or these girls. It could be whatever. I mean, and you realize somehow I missed this. And I think an awful lot of people, even though they were huge in this country, I think an awful lot of people did that with Tragically Hip when they got on their farewell tour. They tuned in because everybody's listening to Tragically Hip and they went, well, I hadn't really been listening to them, but I really liked them. I think that expanded their audience massively. I think that happens. I think people find it late and go, I don't know how I missed this.
Yeah. And you know, documentaries, especially in music, are hitting a really nice stride because thanks to Netflix and other streaming services, you actually have a pretty good outlet for it rather than only trying to concentrate on movie theaters where you can have these docudramas about Triumph or Anvil, another hard rock band from Toronto that didn't sell any copies worth really thinking about didn't really sell out stadiums at all, played for 30, 40 years, just did their thing, had that documentary about them, about just a band that never made it but wouldn't quit. And suddenly they're on the cover of every music magazine, seemingly around the world, because, you know, that was the band that was almost forgotten about thanks to that. Or Rodriguez from
yes, yep, with the guitar, walking along the streets of Detroit. Yep,
so good, so good. So you end up with music documentaries helping the Junos every year when they induct somebody like Corey Hart. You think, wow, Corey Hart, what's he been up to? And then you realize, well, maybe not so much. But then you go back and you listen to, you know, Boy in the Box, the album that sold a million copies in this country back in 1984. And First Offense, his debut album that has Sunglasses at Night. And you realize, I don't really need to hear Sunglasses at Night again. But when you do, you're like, hey, this is really good. You realize just how many good songs and what a run they had, even if it was for 3 or 4 years. Because sometimes that's longer than 99.9% of the artists out there.
You know who really benefited from that documentary thing to really help them? Spinal Tap. And the Ruddles. And the Ruddles. Yeah, they were really helped by those movies.
They went from performing with midgets on stage in Stonehenge to, you know, selling out networks in England. So yeah, absolutely.
Well, and on a more serious note, the other one that really comes to mind from recent years, as far as a documentary that made people, now they were hardly ever underrated, but the 3-hour documentary on the Eagles that was on Netflix for a long time.
Yeah.
Boy, that got a lot of people tuning back into Eagles music. And all right, so Strange Advance was one of them. Who else would you put on your list? All-time underrated Canadian groups.
Yeah, I would say for somebody that's a little bit more recent, I would say Sloan has to be up there as well. You know, and I know that they've sold a lot of copies. I know that they've got in somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 Juno Award nominations and have won back in 1997. But still to this day, almost every 18 months, you can be guaranteed that a new Sloan release will come out, and it will be as brilliant and poppy and rocky and memorable as their early stuff. But they came along at a time when nobody was thinking about Halifax as the next wave of musical talent, in the same way that the world seeming, you know, the world A&R department, that record label, they're the ones responsible for signing new artists, all descended on Halifax in the way that they did in Seattle, signing Nirvana and Soundgarden and Pearl Jam and Alice in Chains. Soon there were bands that came out of Halifax, like Eric's Trip and Sloan, thanks to Sloan's success there. And I think they were given the ability on an independent, small record label to get and heard across the country and play across the country with some of their songs. And sometimes, you know, in the case of One Chord to Another or Twice Removed, their two albums back in the late 1990s, was some of the greatest Canadian music of all time. And I think that they still don't get the recognition that they deserve just for breaking down those doors.
Of course, all of this is based on taste as well. We know with any music that there is a huge sure. part of that. But I tell you what, there were three, as I was thinking about this today, three for me, four, but the one that I had that's current that I think is underrated, and maybe they're not underrated. I think they don't get the credit they deserve, because I think they're fantastic, and it just happens that they play out of Hamilton now, which is the Trues. I think the Trues should be getting a lot more than they get. But three from the past that I thought, okay, who are my underrated Canadian groups or bands or whatever that just have never got the due. And I realized that these three, they all got plenty of coverage once upon a time. I'm sort of basing this on, you know, we hear Rolling Stone, as you say, Stone's music or Boston or Journey or whatever. We hear it all the time. These three have essentially disappeared from the radio. And to me, that's one indication of they haven't got their due. One of them, Jeff Healey, who I just can't understand how Jeff, I don't know when the last time was that I heard Jeff Healey played on a radio station anywhere. He's just gone.
I hear While My Guitar Gently Weeps solely only on the Beatles channel in the U.S.
Okay. Oh, on Sirius. Yeah. Okay. Another one.
But yes, I agree. Broke down all those doors. One of the world's best guitarists.
Yeah.
You know, the you know, the fact that he was blind certainly made him a media darling and got a lot of attention. And then once that wore off, people were like, wow, he can
play. Yeah, he can actually play. Yeah, he can play, for real. He's one. Another one who, and this guy, again, if you like this guy's music, maybe people hate this guy's music, but if you like this guy's music, I've always been amazed that his career has seemingly largely been confined to the bar scene almost. David Wilcox. I have no idea how David Wilcox never was bigger than he was.
Yeah, that's another really, really great one too. I think maybe Laying Pipe was the last song that I remember hearing a lot on the radio. He kind of had a little bit of a forceful retirement. I know he's had some health problems recently, but he's somebody that, again, should be every 2 or 3 hours on classic rock radio.
His songs are completely sing-alongable, which isn't a word, but we're going to make it one.
For me, it's a riverboat.
It is. It's a great music. And the other one, and look, I know there are going to be people who are going to say, you are out of your mind with this one as an underrated Canadian artist. And I would have never put her on this list until I was at the SARS concert in Downsview back in 2003. And she blew me away. And now maybe she's only good for 6 songs. And so underrated doesn't count. Sass Jordan was amazing in that concert. And I went, Sass Jordan should have had more than she had as far as attention.
Well, speaking about Sass Jordan's publicist, which, fortunately, I am.
Oh, are you? Okay. I did not know that. Okay.
And I know you had no idea. So, yeah, I worked with her for about 4 albums, and she puts together some really great blues stuff. She was supposed to be on the David Bowie tribute tour that was going around the world that was put together by the Bowie Estate, but got blown out from COVID. And she has a brand new album coming out in June. And it's on the True North label, which is right down the street from you, from Waterdown. And you know what's interesting about her story, and I think that, you know, really quickly to tie it all in, so much success in life has nothing to do with how hard you work. Everything has to do with all those sliding doors that this one opens and this one opens, and it's luck, and it's having the right team, having the right champions. So many things have to go right, which is why people should look at those credits whenever a TV show or a movie airs on the television and realize that if any one of those people screwed up, this is not a great film anymore. Same thing with music.
Well, I had no idea that you were her publicist. I will say that at that concert, and it turned out that Jeff Healey played with her in one of the songs. And when they said Make You a Believer, that was just a fantastic performance. And I went, how has Sass Jordan, and I know she did have tons of attention and tons of play, but again, you don't hear her stuff nearly like I would have thought you would have. All right, we got a couple of minutes here. I want to ask you very quickly before we go. We're talking about underrated Canadian performers, and there are lots, and people, radley@900chml.com, people can let me know if we're forgetting someone, because I'm sure everybody has one. There's the flip side of this. We have for years in this country had Canadian content CanCon rules. And I believe that what that's done, that's helped Canadian performers, but to the degree that we've created a bunch of Canadian performers who are so overrated because their music never in a million years would have got played if it was just the open market, but they got play time because we had to fill with Canadian bands. Who is one? Does one come to mind for you that you go, man, that is a group that just, if they had to do it on their own without CanCon, we would have never heard of them.
No, I would never have heard of them. But I will say, though, that it's interesting that you bring that up, because those artists, we may not appreciate them, but I would say that probably they helped keep the music industry going, thanks to our hard-earned tax dollars, with the government giving radio stations back some money in order to continue to play Canadian content rules. So, it's not because I don't want to insult anybody, but I have a real hard time in my brain thinking that anybody is really overrated or that I don't like that music, you know? Because there's always artists like Our Lady Peace that you think don't break America, but then you go look at their tour dates and they're selling out Latin America and Japan and the UK, or artists like Moist or even Tyler Shaw, when you think, oh, I don't really hear Tyler Shaw on the radio, then you go to his Wikipedia page, and he's got like 17 straight top 40 hits. So, there's always a flip side of it. You just won't hear it from me.
Well, now that I'm remembering that you're also doing publicity work, I'm almost scared to throw out names for fear that you, that you might be the publicist and you'll never come back on the show
to
again.
The audience, when I no, I'm only kidding.
Anyway, listen, it's a great thing. If you get a chance, by the way, if you're listening and you get a chance, if it comes on TV again, if you get a chance to see the Triumph documentary, even if you're not a massive fan of that style of music, it was a really interesting story about three guys trying to make it, and very well done. And love to hear from you on who you think is the underrated Canadian band or singer who just never, for whatever reason, got the due that they should have. And there's a bunch more. I mean, there's a lot more that we could have probably talked about, but Celine Dion, yeah, she never got the attention there. She and Shania Twain, I'm telling you, they're suffering.
Right. So Shania, feel young.
I know that Celine and Shania, you know, between their 17 houses in the Swiss Alps, they're suffering, and it's horrible. But Eric Alper, always appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this today.
No problem. Thanks for having me, man. We'll talk soon.
The Scott Radley Show, weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.